I have a lot of friends at Meta, and I can tell you that everybody's very the mood is very down. People don't want to be surveyed. I mean, just because we can manage and monitor our employees doesn't mean we should. And then and when you have a unmotivated, low morale employee pool, they're going to underperform. They're not going to perform. You cannot manage cognitive labor the same way you manage manual labor.
Welcome to Big Bang Tech, and welcome to my co-host, Elvin Van Graelen. Hello, Elvin.
Hey, Jens, good to see you again.
Good to see you. It's a real big week. Elon loses against OpenAI. SpaceX may become the IPO of the year. No, of the decade. Microsoft shows AI agents in the cyber defense. And Meta raises a new labor question. And finally, Eric Schmidt from my favorite company, Google, well, he was a former CEO, gets booed by students over AI. That's pretty new. So this is not just a tech news. This is a new power map. So let's go, Elvin. Huh?
Yes, lot's happening. Absolutely. Yeah. Let's do it.
So what are your thoughts about Elon versus OpenAI? Elon has, he was something like a founding father of OpenAI. And then he has just lost a major round in the lawsuit against OpenAI. So what is going on there?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is kind of an issue that's been brewing for a long time between Sam and Elon, and they've had other ways of trying to resolve it. They haven't. And essentially, the court ruling was that he waited too long. So they didn't even evaluate the evidence. After 3 weeks of going through this trial, it was essentially the period of I can't remember what the term is. It's expired. Which, I think from a technicality perspective, it's fine. But from a satisfaction perspective, it was not very satisfying for any of the audiences. Right? And also, I think it created an issue in terms of what we talked about last time, which is it actually did not give a precedence on whether or not a company that was a nonprofit can become a for-profit, and which actually I think was the bigger issue that should have been discussed and should have been ruled on, and it was not. So I'm disappointed in that. In fact, yesterday I was at an event at night when Elon called in for a interview, and the first question to him was, what do you think about the decision? And he's like, it's what it is. So he wasn't, it felt like he wasn't too excited or disappointed by it. It was kind of, I think, expected. So
yeah, and I think normally nobody would say that Elon came very late, because he is the man who's always very early coming up. And that's with our next thing. It's with SpaceX, and this is really huge. It's really big. The infrastructure stock of the AI age. And what do you think about that? What's going on there?
Yeah, no, I think this is going to be a very big move, and it's smart for Elon to go out quickly before OpenAI or Anthropic gets out, because he's going to eat up a lot of both the attention as well as the funds out there, right? And I feel like he's creating something that he has to grow into, right? Because the value of the company and the value of the AI side is actually the economics of it doesn't justify the valuation they have. But he's painting a very good long-term story, and he's talking about having a gigawatt or a terawatt of compute being sent in space and giant space data centers and all of these things that might create demand for more Starship launches. But I think the type of scale he's talking about, which essentially would require hundreds a day of Starship launches, is not something that he's able to do in the timeframes that he's discussing. But the valuations of these companies right now are based on him delivering on that. So I think he may do a good job in getting the IPO to go out at a high price, but I don't know if he can sustain those prices.
And for the price, it's important. It's not anymore a rocket company. It's about Starlink, satellites, defense, connectivity, data, and geopolitical power. You see it in Ukraine and everywhere. Without Elon, nothing is going on there.
Yeah, yeah. So he's right now more than half, or probably like 60% of the global launch capacity, and he wants to become like probably 80 or 90% of the global launch capacity, right? And I think the satellites and communication, I have a lot of faith he's going to do that well. The whole story around AI data centers, I think it's not as real as he makes it out to be. And both from a technical perspective as well as from a cost perspective, it just doesn't really make sense, at least anytime in the next, you know, 5 years.
Yeah. And I think for him and for this, for the stock exchange, it's very important to be a company for the future, for operating geopolitics. Yeah, geopolitics technology. And so I think, you would sign it? You will sign it?
Sign which?
The stock.
I don't think I would not buy it. I think it will pop because he's a really good marketer. But I don't know if it's going to stay high, because I think once you go public, then you have to release all of your financials, and those financials will not justify the size of this IPO. I mean, we're talking about a $2 trillion valuation on a company that really still has relatively minimal real revenues. And, you know, on the SpaceX side, there is revenues, but that revenue is not necessarily as scalable because it's all very dependent on a lot of governmental contracts. Whereas the AI side, I don't think it's that real yet.
So hands off of this stock from the expert Evan. Let's switch to Microsoft. Microsoft, well, the owner or part owner of OpenAI, and there is something new. Microsoft is showing where AI agents may first create real enterprise value: cybersecurity. So that's pretty good. That are good news for us. That something is.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're proving something that's actually quite interesting, because in the past, people used to think that you had to have giant models, essentially God models, right? What Anthropic and OpenAI are creating to be able to have the highest performance on things. And what they're showing is that with their new M-Dash project, is that they bring in 100 smaller models or, you know, last generation models. And it actually outperforms the cybersecurity capabilities of the most expensive giant models. And this actually, I think, can change a lot of perspectives in terms of, you know, how should models be trained and how should they be deployed, and the value of models versus harness. And the harness in terms of how all of these models are put together and the logic of connecting them. That actually, to me, is where the breakthroughs will actually happen, versus trying to create a giant super model that knows everything. I actually think that what makes more sense is to create models that connect a lot of little specialized models. It's actually more energy efficient, it's more training efficient, and it's more cost efficient.
But it's not really sexy, because if we write about cybersecurity, nobody cares about it. Why is it like that?
Well, I mean, cybersecurity is something that is in the background. You don't care about it until it breaks, right?
Yeah.
But when it breaks, everybody cares, because
it's of course, it's like an insurance, life insurance. You have to have it, but it's not sexy at all. You do not like it.
Yeah, but I think cybersecurity is only the first use case of this. It could be used on the concept of integrating lots of little models into a general harness to enhance intelligence. Is a practice can be applied to any industry, right? So this is why I actually feel like the current chase for these giant data centers and the giant, you know, 10 or 20 trillion parameter models is actually misguided and unnecessary. So
you were astonished about this news, or is it for you pretty normal that it will show up and there will be?
I think I was surprised at how quickly and how well it performs. I'm not astonished, but I feel like this actually is a sign to the world that maybe we may not be on the right track of just expecting pure scaling to solve everything. which is good news, which is good news, because it also means that we don't necessarily need to continue to build, you know, trillions of dollars of data centers the way that we are doing today.
Yeah, you're always very skeptical about data centers. Yeah, so they are too big and we do not need it and too much energy. And
well, the thing is, we are these data centers are built to try to solve a problem that we're using current techniques for. And there may be breakthroughs that come that can significantly improve the efficiency and the methodology of how this training happens. You know, the fact that our brain is a general purpose computer and it runs on less than 20 watts and it takes, you know, millions of watts to do the similar things on a giant rack, that it's there's definitely ways, things that we don't understand yet in terms of how to do it more efficiently. And using only brute force, it's worked, but it cannot continue to, we cannot continue to use that technique because now we're at the edge of physical limitations. So
we have another company, a real big one, Meta. Meta is for news. I've read some news, I think approximately since 3 weeks, and then another news came up about reports that employee behavior could be used to train AI agents. And the concern is screen activity, mouse movements, workflows, the daily patterns of human work, that they track it. And then with this information, they will have a new, yeah, the digital labor force. They will train the digital labor force. What do you think about it?
I think that's been the intent there for a while in terms of trying to, you know, increase efficiency. And we talked about it a few weeks ago, I remember, about, you know, using it as a management tool. But right now, you know, I have a lot of friends at Meta, and I can tell you that everybody's very, the mood is very down. You know, people don't want to be surveyed. People don't want to feel like they're training to replace them.
So for you, that are not fake news, that are real news, that this works, that when I'm writing on my, when I use my computer, that the system realize what I'm doing the whole day, and then at least they say, okay, I can do it by myself, or the systems can do that by themselves.
I think it's a twofold thing. One is about labor replacement. The other thing is actually more about labor management, efficiency management, right? It used to be that, you know, when you're on a assembly line, people can tell, okay, are you moving at the same speed? Because, and it has to move, so you have to be working, and it forces you to be productive. But when you're at a, when you're a white collar worker in front of a computer, how much time are you using moving your mouse? How much time are you using your brain thinking, right? It's hard to differentiate the two. And if you're being measured in how much time, how many keystrokes are you making, and you're measuring how many mouse strokes are you making, you're now being gauged and measured in the same way that a
manufacturing worker,
an assembly line is. And people don't like that because that's a different way of being benchmarked.
Do you like it?
No, I would not like it because I think most people who are working and being paid as white collar workers are using their brain, and it's not necessarily equated to how many keystrokes they make, right? So, and you know, one good idea could be worth $1 trillion, but that doesn't require anything to be done on a computer.
Yeah, that's I think we are facing new questions we have never thought about, right?
Yeah. I mean, just because we can manage and monitor our employees doesn't mean we should. And when you have a unmotivated, low morale employee pool, they're going to underperform. They're not going to, you know, you cannot manage cognitive labor the same way you manage manual labor.
Hmm. So the former CEO of Google, Eric Schmidt, I think you know him, and he was booed during a university commencement speech when he spoke about artificial intelligence. So he was not in a tech conference. He was not with people on the way who love AI, like you, for example. So what was going on there?
Yeah, so he spoke at the commencement speech for Arizona State University. It's actually one of the biggest universities in America. And
Where is it?
In Arizona.
So Arizona, all right.
You know, one of the kind of desert southern mountain states, I guess. But the, you know, I think the issue is really more about his approach, right? And he's really talking and very vocal about, you know, AI replacing labor, and he wasn't really giving people hope, and he wasn't giving people solution. He was essentially saying you need to kind of just go with it. And you know, I think in a Silicon Valley audience, his messages would probably be okay because everybody already accepts that they're going to all lose their jobs. But when you have young people who are in the beginning of their career and they feel like you're taking away their livelihood, and not everybody there is studying technology, right? So they're not even part, they don't even feel like they have a part to play in this area. I think he just misunderstood the audience and the type of messaging that he should be. He's giving essentially a message that he would normally give to Silicon Valley people, and I don't think that's the right. It's not the right approach.
But it's interesting and important too. In boardrooms, AI means productivity. That means more money. And on campuses, AI can mean fear.
And I think one is about fear, and one is just that you know, he represents what's creating this problem, right? Because he was part of Google, and Google is one of the big companies building this thing. So he, you know, people see him as saying things that are self-serving, right? He's already a billionaire. He's the one that's creating the technology that's going to take away their jobs and take away their futures. Why should he be the one that lectures them about how to live life? Right, he's destroying their life from their perspective, and I can appreciate that, understand, you know, that sentiment. So he should have came in with a different approach, and I think he was overemphasizing AI when he should have been more emphasizing how can the human side of the education play a bigger role. How can people continue to prosper and flourish even with AI? Not to say, how do you meld into the world where AI now, you know, produces everything and controls everything?
But maybe this industry needs a new PR agency that is explaining it in a better way.
Yeah, no, it actually, to be honest, I think that right now the AI industry is doing itself a very big disservice. You have, you know, Dario saying within, you know, 12 to 18 months, all cognitive labor will be replaced by AI. That's, and without a solution, it doesn't help. It scares people and it makes people angry. And America's 80% of people are see AI as negative to the society. That's a very, very bad thing.
Evan, last question. What's your message for the week and for us?
So I'm actually working on a new paper. And I think this message is something that's important for people to understand, is that right now, all of this race condition that's happening is because there's a perception from a few labs in the world that whoever gets to AGI is going to become a decatrillionaire, right? They're essentially going to take over what we just talked about. The cognitive labor, white collar labor industry in the world is somewhere around $30 to $40 trillion of value. And they think, if I make AGI, I will be able to transfer that $30 to $40 trillion into my pocket. And it is a mirage, it's a myth, and it won't happen. And we need to stop incentivizing and perpetuating this myth, because it's making people make bad decisions. It's making people manipulate governments to try to be that first person or the first company. And it's also making these companies manipulate governments to create tension and conflict between countries when it's unnecessary. We need to see AI as a public good, something that the world can benefit from, something that the world works on together, and something that then when it comes is shared with everyone. That is the and not to use it as a way to make money for individuals or companies. We have to change that perspective, because until we do, we're going to have these issues of these young people hating this technology. We're going to have, you know, companies fighting over it. We're going to have lack of sharing between countries and duplicating of efforts and building, you know, unnecessary data centers and spending money that should be built in terms of creating social infrastructure. We're now creating, you know, AI infrastructure that is going to be wasted when real breakthroughs are created, right? So this is, I know I'm kind of preaching to the choir, but I feel like we just need to wake up and voice ourselves that AI should not be used as a way to profit. It should be used as a way to benefit humanity. And that's my message to the people in both Germany and the US and China and the rest of the world.
So, yeah, in Germany, you will be in Berlin very soon, and then you will have an appointment with the, well, German government, with the Department of Digitalization. And this will be the message from you to these guys too?
Yeah, absolutely. Because once we realize that, then we realize we don't need to race. Once we realize that, then we can say, let's work together, take what we have, deploy it in a smooth, responsible way so that the workers are not being, that they're not losing their job in a very quick way. We're not creating a dislocation. We're not creating a disruption to economy and to society, because that's going to be bad for everyone.
Yeah. So we will see you soon here in Europe. And
I look forward to see you in Berlin soon. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. But the show is over, and we will see the audience in 2 weeks again. And so if you have any question, don't hesitate to send us an email at debuer@gdb.de. And especially if you have nice emails and if you have compliments from me and critics to Alvin.
Very good. And I next time, are we going to do this in Berlin live? Is that?
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, next time, let's do it live and next to the Brandenburger Tor. And,
very good.
See you soon. And thank you very much, everybody.
Okay, have a great week.
Have a good week. Bye.